Welcome to another podcast from Fix My Project Chaos. My name is Elise Stevens, and today I have the fabulous Sue Bivens, who is a very experienced, wise project manager. And Sue's going to be sharing her career story. Hello, Sue.
Hello, Elise. Well, I was going to share a little bit about my career story. I spent the first 29 years of my career with IBM. And I found it to be a wonderful company to work for. And after I decided to try retirement because my husband wanted to try it, I learned that retirement wasn't for me. And I went back to work for many more years. I was an airplane warrior, loved almost every minute of it.
What got you into project management?
Well, I think project management chose me. When I was in high school, rather than being on stage for the theater club, I led the stage crew. And the objective was to change the scenes on stage as quickly as possible. And that took planning and leadership. And late in my career, I actually chose project portfolio management as one of the most important contributions that I could make. And in between, I managed a lot of projects and programs and portfolios.
When you started out with IBM, what type of roles did you start with in that organization?
Well, I started as a systems engineer, and that really was a technical support person who helped install computer systems for IBM's clients and helped them manage those computer systems. And after a few years, I was promoted to systems engineering manager. In my first training class with IBM, of 30 people, there were two women and 28 men. So it was fairly unusual to be a manager in a high-tech company back in the early 1970s.
What were some of the challenges that you faced in that environment?
I think there were two things. I didn't really think very much about becoming a female manager in a high-tech company. But I learned that there were some challenges in that. I think the other biggest challenge was for me learning that a good decision or process can result in a bad outcome, but that doesn't mean you're a bad person or a bad leader. So I'll talk a little bit about both of those experiences, if that's all right.
I'd love you to share those.
When I was promoted to manager, I didn't expect to have some of the reactions that I got. One of my employees really never introduced me as his manager. He would introduce me as a manager. So I could tell there was some resistance there. And then another of my engineers introduced me to the CIO of a large medical complex in Los Angeles. And the CIO slapped his knees and ran around his office laughing at the idea that I could be this gentleman's manager. He looked so funny that I just burst out laughing, and he stopped behaving that way. It was heartening for me to find out that the systems engineer actually claimed me by introducing me as his manager to another client. And then the CIO in question called us in for an emergency on a Saturday night. And when he saw me leap into a room-sized rolling trash bin and find the error printout that we needed to solve his problem, he decided I was okay. And I think the message here is, in part at least, do your job and do it better than anyone else. The other major challenge that I faced was learning that there's a distinction between decisions and outcomes. That you can do the right thing and still have a bad outcome. I thought when I was younger that if I did everything right, the outcome would always be right. So Paul de Podesta is the Harvard statistics whiz that was featured in Moneyball. And he talks about a matrix between processes and outcomes and says we all want to be in the upper left box, which is good process and have a good outcome. But he says, the box in the upper right, which is good process, bad outcome, is the tough reality we all face in industries that are dominated by uncertainty. So when we have competition, there's, of course, uncertainty. And in my case, I led a team on a multi-billion dollar runoff competition for a contract with the U.S. federal government. And we had what we thought was the best solution, and we proposed that along with what we felt was the best business approach to delivery and implementation. The federal government agreed that we won the technical solution and that we won the business approach, but we lost on the third leg of the competition with the price. So we had a good process. We had a bad outcome, and I found it personally traumatic to lose when we had done so well. What was ironic is that the winning solution, after 10 years, the federal government had to cancel the contract because it was an unworkable solution for its time. That was part of learning that you can also have the opposite. You can have a bad process and have a good outcome. And that's the wolf in sheep's clothing. So I think those were probably two of my biggest challenges.
As a new manager, when you come in and someone won't acknowledge you as your leader, that takes a bit of a hit to your inner being, I would have thought.
Well, I think because I didn't think of myself first as a female manager, it wasn't personally hurtful to me. I was just aware enough that must be what was going on in his head. He was the only one of my team that I sensed that from, which I guess was a good thing. And when he came around and introduced me as his manager, I was very pleased with that. It really didn't make me question my ego as much as losing a big contract did.
Just moving on to losing that big contract, I've worked in IT a long time and been on the buying side of systems rather than on the, like in an IBM sense. And I've seen some very bad projects happen where technology isn't implemented well because the client didn't change their business processes and radically that was required. And I think that along the way, one of my biggest learnings is that there's a time and a place for things sometimes.
Yes. I think maybe you're thinking of what needs to happen with transformational change or organizational change.
Yeah. And I think that sometimes organizations also focus too much on the price to get things done.
Well, this agency certainly did do that. And they paid a tremendous price for it.
Well, when you look at the statistics for project failure being so high, then you've got to wonder about what's going on within organizations.
In my experience, there are lots of mega projects over $1 billion in value that exceed not only their schedule and their cost, but don't deliver the value for which they were selected. And I think one of the reasons, perhaps, is that they don't pay enough attention to interfaces. And these interfaces that exist because they have a very complicated contract strategy, and there need to be interfaces between companies that don't have a contractual relationship between themselves. But I think the other reason that a lot of these projects might not be as successful as they could be, is that it takes a tremendous amount of focus on changing people's hearts and minds to implement any kind of change. All projects introduce change. Some of them are transformational in nature. And in fact, one of the most rewarding things that I ever worked on was a transformational change that was internal to IBM. And I think what made us successful is that we had a very well-conceived vision of what we needed to do, and we knew why we needed to do it, And the other reason is that we worked very hard on changing the hearts and minds, all of the people who were going to be affected. So I think a vision, what do we need to be? Well, first, why do we need to change? What is it going to look like? And why is that good for me if I'm the individual employee who's going to be affected? What makes that person say, I hear you, I don't like it, and I'm afraid of it, to I accept it, to I embrace it, I want to be part of this?
Sue, you're singing the same song that I sing about good change, and that all projects introduce some kind of change. And yet I still have trouble getting people to appreciate that projects are introducing change and we need to address the people side of things as well.
It probably is the most important, because if the people don't want to do it, they will find a way to force change.
So you are a systems engineering manager in IBM. What was your career path into project management within IBM?
Well, as a systems engineer, you're always managing projects. And in the case of the systems engineer, you're managing implementations of computer systems with the clients. Project management just seemed like a natural thing to do. I managed people and projects for the rest of my IBM career. One of the most exciting things that I had the opportunity to do, the Summer Olympics was held in 1984 in Los Angeles, where I was based at the time. I was a middle manager at the time, and they asked me if I would be interested in managing operations and support for IBM for the Olympics, because IBM was a major sponsor. And one of the things we were responsible for was the results system. And of course, you can't change the schedule for a project like that, because the Olympics are going to start when the Olympics are going to start. You can't have systems or applications fail because 2 billion people are waiting for the results of a particular event around them. They're watching around the world. So it was one of the most fun and challenging projects. And so I did that in 1984. I was also responsible for a number of the internal operations that IBM had to do in Southern California at the time. But I think it was natural to gravitate to project management. So after my IBM career, went to work for a fairly young company and managed some large projects for them and became what was called a delivery executive. So I was responsible for a number of their project implementations. And later I went to work for a very large Japanese company. And that was another interesting experience to be a woman at that time and present to executives in Japan, because it was very unusual to have females in positions of responsibility. But it was also fun. It was a very fun time. And there was a young woman who was being promoted in management in Japan, and we became very good friends. While I was working with this Japanese company, we had the opportunity to have joint projects with other companies. The company I worked for was Hitachi, and we did a joint project with Microsoft and also a company that produced storage controllers. And what I learned from that is that it's because you have conflicts of objectives when you're doing multi-company projects, it's very important to develop an overlap. What are your overlapping common objectives or the value proposition for each company and focus on achieving those while managing the conflicts that naturally arise because different companies have different priorities. We also had the opportunity to do a joint project with Sun Microsystems. And so I was able to continue applying those things I learned from the Microsoft project with the Sun Microsystems, which is now part of Oracle, of course. So I gravitated to project management. But subsequently, I realized that a lot of organizations are running a less than optimal set of projects, and I really became enamored of project portfolio management in the early 2000s. Had the opportunity to implement that for multiple organizations, and that's kind of a transformational change for executives to be able to make joint decisions about what optimal portfolio of projects is going to best help them achieve their strategic objectives. So that to me has been one of the highlights of my career.
Working with other partners to deliver a solution to the customer, everyone's got different agendas and different things that they want to achieve.
And that's why a jointly developed value proposition, why is company A doing this? And what does company A want out of it? What's it willing to contribute? And the same for each company, and then find the overlapping areas.
So what advice did you receive that has been pivotal in your career?
I thought about a good question, and maybe the most important advice came from a colleague on a particularly troubled project that I was sent to rescue. And that advice was, no matter how emotionally charged the situation might be, stay focused on the business matter at hand. It's very important, of course, to have empathy in a situation like that, but it's equally important to refrain from becoming part of the emotion. It kind of reminded me of Rudyard Kipling's poem, If. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you. And I love the poem. It goes on. The message that my colleague had for me really was keep your eye on the ball.
And that can be difficult to not get swept up in all the emotion that's going on.
Yes, it can be. But I think, you know, having my friend and colleague, when he told me that I should do that consciously, I mean, it's a way of controlling your own emotions and focusing on what does this project need in order to be successful, and what are the issues at hand, some of which are emotional distress, and those have to be handled. Conflict is an important skill to have in that situation. But I think the best advice was to keep the objective in mind as you go through all of that.
Well, it's very good advice. So what are some of the other skills that you've really used to be successful as a project manager, as a portfolio manager in your career?
Well, I think it's important for anyone in that kind of environment to understand the business or understand the organization, understand its objectives, and where does my project or where does my program or where does my portfolio fit in. And to keep that in mind, many projects don't deliver their value to the business until they're finished. I think that I'm joining a crowd of people, you know, including the Project Management Institute, who are advising project managers, and it's advice I gave myself as well, to focus on the business objectives. And it's too easy to lose sight of of the business objectives when you're worrying about schedule and you're worrying about cost and you want to know what the earned value numbers are. But I think having understanding what the sponsor wants, understanding what the senior executive is after, and also holding them to task. I was on a project that I'm not proud of, where I could not hold the sponsor to task. And if the sponsor is not focusing on the objectives for which they authorized this project to happen, there's going to be a lot of rework. So I think learning to manage up is an important skill to have.
I agree with you. So what advice would you give other project managers?
I think maybe the most important is to understand where their project fits in the business and to ensure as they manage the project that they are aware of whether it is straying from the purpose for which it was authorized. Ensure that all parties understand that, understand where is this project now in terms of the probability that it continues as it's in development to be on track to deliver the business benefits. That maybe is the most important thing. I think another skill, and one that I learned fairly, I went to grad school fairly late in my career, and I learned to appreciate decision analysis, decision management, decision science. I think the ability to make group decisions would be helped everywhere by some understanding of effective decision making and decision science. You don't hear that very often, I don't think, in project management circles, but it was a real eye-opener to me in terms of how to make effective portfolio decisions.
You're right. Very few people talk about using methodical decision making.
Yeah, I mean, very often it's the loudest voice in the room or the highest ranking but misled executive making the wrong decisions.
Yes, it is, and I see it very often.
I think we all do. It can be so much better.
Oh, I agree with you. Well, Sue, thank you very much for sharing that great insight.
You're welcome. Best wishes. I hope our paths cross again.
I hope so. That ends another podcast from Fix My Project Chaos.